irrigation instructions by Venerable Jyotikar.
Basically, sitting in a circle, something like a circle. So the each of us can see one another. Circle in a circle. In a circle. Before the retreat, this is the last time we meet here. So is everyone coming for the retreat here? We have a list of people. I know one person is not here. He told me that she was going to America. Yes, I know what you're saying. Maybe we just come to it. Mr. Lee, Caroline. As you know, I talk so much about preparation. It's very, very important preparation. Because if you really think about it, we go through life without being prepared for anything at all. So everything happens to us just by chance. And I think this is not a good way to live a life. Of course, there are many things that happen in our life which are unexpected. So we have to do something about it immediately. There are things happening like that once in a while. But mostly, if you think about it, we know that something is going to happen. At least we have a high percentage of probability that something is going to happen. Like say, what is something that is really sure to happen in our life? That, definitely sure, there's no doubt about it. Are we preparing for that? And I'm going to talk about this also one day. But I wonder if people really want to hear that. Mostly I want to see things positive and encouraging, motivating people to do something good. But there is a big motivation, a big difference. I know quite a few people who got very close to death. I took them to the hospital, so I know how they felt. They were very sick, almost dying. I took them to the hospital and looked after them. And I found out that those who experienced that very deeply came back a different person. So this is very important. So even though we are sure that we are going to die, definitely, and we don't know whether it's going to be today or 50 years later, we don't know. But it could happen today. Who knows? So better to be prepared. And this retreat also, we know that it's going to happen, because we are going to make it happen. Better to be prepared. And understand this, that your meditation does not begin on the first day of the retreat. It has begun a long time ago. The retreat is part of the whole process. And even after the retreat, your meditation practice will still go on until you die, until the last moment. This is something I'm really preparing for. The last moment, I want to know how it is, how it feels, how it's going to be, and how my mental state would be on my last moment, just before I die, 1 second before I die. I want to know that. I want to be aware of that also, and then die. That's the best way to die. So I'm really preparing for that. That's why I say preparation. If you have prepared well enough, your work is half done already. And if you take a very simple example from your life, from my life, because most of us have studied for many, many years, got university degrees also, you know, some of the people, they don't study well, they don't attend the lectures well, they don't go into practicals well, they don't try to solve the problems very well. And then when the exam is very near, what do they do? They panic. They worry. They have so much anxiety. They can't sleep. They can't eat. And then the moment before they go into the exam hall, they're shaking. And in the exam hall, they look at the question paper. They say, I don't know this. I don't know that. Too agitated to do anything anymore. No time to think anymore. So even when I was a student, I try to prepare quite a lot. And maybe this is part of my personality. Some people want to prepare, and some people, they just want to take a chance. So to take chance is not really very good. If you take chance, there's very little, very small probability that it will happen. So even when I was young, when I went to sit for exams, I studied very well. And then when I go to the exam hall, I took pencil, pen, ruler, identity card. That's all. No books, no papers, no notes. No need to study anymore. Too late. If you still have to study, too late for you. You're just making your mind more agitated and tired. You're making yourself tired. That's the time when you have to be fairly relaxed. When I went into the exam hall, I did not look at the question paper immediately. Just sit there and meditate for 5 minutes. Then when the mind is very calm, look at the question, this is something I can answer, just write down. Slowly, not in a hurry. Finish, okay, something well done already. If you've done one thing well, it gives you so much courage. Makes you more confident, makes you calm also. When you look at another problem, this is something I can do. Okay, do that. And then you find it too hard, okay, I'll come back to you later. Another one, try it. So this is the way we should live our life. Even though we prepare very well, we can not really feel for sure that everything will happen the way we have expected. And we have to prepare for that also. Well, I prepared very well, but nobody can tell that things will happen the way we had expected. But anyway, if we had prepared very well, we can at least feel sure that it won't be too bad. It won't come out too bad. At least it will be satisfying. So preparation is very, very important. And in some ways, we go through our life preparing and preparing and preparing. There's no end to preparation. Go on preparing and preparing. And actually, this preparation also is our life. And I'm even preparing for my next life. This life. And I've talked about it before. Because I know it's going to happen. And if you know how to prepare for it, well, you can feel very confident that it's most likely to happen the way you prepared it. That's how a Buddha became a Buddha, because he prepared for it. And parami, what is parami? Parami is preparation, actually. It's perfection. You practice something so well that it becomes perfect, and actually it is a preparation. Without fulfilling the parami, which means without preparing yourself, without making yourself worthy of that, it will not happen. So if we want something to happen, we have to prepare for it and feel that we are worthy for it. I'm ready for it. I'm worthy for it. Then we can feel very relaxed and happy. And even happy that you have to be tested. You have to go through a very difficult condition now. So if you are prepared, you feel very happy and excited about it. If you are not prepared, then you feel terrified. You have more anxiety, more worry. So we have prepared for a long, long time, and we still have to go on preparing for that. So this is a very beautiful gatha. I will talk about it again later in more complete in our presentation. And this is something very encouraging for meditators. This is a translation of Pali verses. Gathas. The Buddha said, do not pursue the past. In Pali, it is Atitam na noa namaya. If you split the words, it will become Atitam na anu namaya. Anu becomes noa. Atitam means the past. Atitam na anu kama. Na means not. Anu means repeatedly. Kama means going. Don't go through the past repeatedly. So the English translation is very, very good. Do not pursue the past. So that doesn't mean that you should forget the past totally. The meaning is very clear if you think about it, if you really read it or listen to it carefully. don't think about the past repeatedly, getting over it, just going round and round and round, thinking, thinking. If there's anything useful that you can remember from the past, remember it. Make use of it. So we have to remember so much, telephone numbers, address, so many things we've done in the past, happened in the past, we have to remember that. But remembering those useful experiences and making use of it is a part of our life, that is okay. But thinking about what happened in the past repeatedly and making yourself unhappy, that is what we should not do. Thinking, recollecting something happened in the past and using it wisely is what we should do. Even Buddha talked about his past life. It's useful to talk about it. So, don't think too much about the past. Make it a habit. When you find yourself thinking about something uselessly, look at it very carefully. Look at the thought very carefully. Look at your attitude. Why do you keep thinking about it? Is that a fear or an attachment? When you're afraid of something, you think about it quite a lot. You can't forget it. When you have great attachment to something, then you keep thinking about it. So there are many reasons for people to think about something repeatedly. Look into your mind and see why you are thinking about that so much. But look at the thought and then your attachment to it, why you are so attached to that happening, to that experience. And do not lose yourself in the future. This is not exactly the Pali translation, but it's close enough. So, thinking about whether something is going to happen or not, worrying about the future, it's also quite useless. But that doesn't mean that you should not plan for the future. So many people repeatedly ask me, well, you talk about, or the Buddha talk about, not thinking about the past, not thinking about the future, how can we live our life? Because we don't understand the correct meaning. Buddha didn't say, don't think at all about the past. Buddha didn't say, don't plan for the future. Think about the past and get something useful, useful lessons, and use it. But don't think repeatedly about the past and make yourself unhappy. You become so unhappy that you cannot do anything useful now. You're just wasting your time and energy. So for a meditator, this is not a proper thing to do. But when naturally you think about it, look very deeply. Your attachment. It's your attachment that makes you keep thinking and thinking about it. So we plan for the future, we are planning for the retreat. I plan for my trip back to Singapore. We have to do that. But worrying too much is not useful. We need to worry. Plan carefully. Find the facts. And do what is needed to be done. As best as you can, but don't worry too much. The past no longer is. Of course we know that the past no longer is. But still, we cling to our past, and we think about it, and make it as if it's present here. We want to think about something happened we like, and we imagine the things, and make it like it's happening now. So only thinking makes the past come into the present. We imagine the past and make it as if it is in the present and make it real. If we don't think about it, it's not real anymore, it's not there. So it's only a memory. The future has not yet come. And we know about it too. So we prepare for it, and there may be something unexpected going to happen. And we also expect that. We expect something unexpected. So, this is also part of our life. Looking deeply at life as it is. So, in this sentence, looking deeply at life as it is. What do we mean by life? It's not something 70 or 80 years. Because that's just a concept. Real life is here now. And if you really look more closely, real life is what we see now, what we hear now, what we smell now, what we feel on our body now, what we taste now, what we think now. Real life is in our present. So life is not just an idea or a concept. Actually, life is our perception or maybe our sensation here now. So when we meditate, what do? We pay complete attention to our sensation. And today, I want to make this word very, very clear. Have you understood the word, as I mean it? It could mean in many things, but as I mean it, the word sensation. So what I mean is, when you feel cold, that is sensation. When you feel hot, that is also sensation. When you feel pain anywhere in your body, that is also sensation. When you feel pleasant, that is also sensation. When you see something, that is sensation also. When you hear something, that is also a sensation. When you smell something, that is sensation. When you taste something, that is also sensation. So that's what I mean by sensation. And when we meditate, we pay complete attention to sensation. That's what we do when we meditate. So we are now getting the gist of what meditation is. So when you pay close attention, like feeling cold, is there any shape? There's no shape. Sensation of cold has no shape. So when we pay attention to feeling cold, we don't think of the shape. We pay attention to the sensation only. So the right experience is something unthinkable. That is another point. If you don't understand it well, please ask me again and again. I'll try my best to answer it clearly. Because direct experience is unthinkable. Do you agree with that? Do you have any doubt about that? Is there any confusion? Direct immediate experience is unthinkable. You can only think about a concept, an idea. And whenever you think about the past, it's not your direct experience anymore. It's a concept. It's an idea you form in your mind. It's your interpretation of the experience you are thinking about. You cannot really think about the real experience, actually. It's only your interpretation of the experience you can think about. And the same thing with the future. You're projecting your past into the future. So you can only think about ideas and interpretations, not direct experience. So when we meditate, we pay complete attention to our direct experience in our body and in our mind also. Whenever thoughts come, we pay direct attention, complete attention to the thought. And sometimes there may be no thought. The mind is just calm and quiet and peaceful. You pay attention to that mind also, that mental state. Not a thought, it's a mental state. No thought, very clear, very calm, very peaceful. You pay attention to that too. This is happening now. You don't do anything about it. You don't try to change it. So when we meditate, we're not trying to do something. We're not trying to make something happen. We are trying to pay attention to what is happening as it is. So this is a very important point. Looking deeply at life as it is. Looking deeply only, not doing anything about it. So please understand this very clearly, because a few days ago, many people came and asked me what to do when they meditate, what to do. Just pay attention. But most people think very surprising. They are surprised by the answer. They think they have to do something. They have to create something. So doing is something we do in our daily life. But when we meditate, we don't do anything at all. We just pay attention. So simple that it's very hard for people to do, just because it is so simple. We have the habit of making things complicated. So when you try to do something, your ego is in the way. So you cannot do that in meditation. Get yourself out of the way and let meditation happen. No ego, not doing anything, just paying complete attention. very, very important. So looking deeply at life as it is in the very here and now. So in the very here and now, there's no story. Can you make a story about something happening right here and now? There's no story here and now. Only sensations arising and passing away. Only immediate sensations. So this verse is very, very clear. If you understand every word, this is the instruction. So looking deeply at life as it is in the very here and now, the practitioner dwells in stability and freedom. If you can keep your mind in the very here and now with all attention, there's stability there. That means your mind is not going to the past, it's not going to the future. So there's stability. If we are thinking about the past or about the future, there's no stability. So when your mind settles in this very here and now, and pay attention to whatever is happening in your body or in your mind, you have stability and freedom also. Because when you are paying total attention, there's no thought. And actually, you know, thought is the prison we are in. So when we don't think, we pay full attention, there's no greed in the mind. Because no thought. Greed is a thought, actually. Without thinking, can you make yourself become greedy? Just try it. Without thinking about a story, a person, a situation, we cannot become greedy. So greed accompanies with a thought. And the same thing with anger. Without thinking anything about it, you can't get angry. So right here and now, there's nothing to be greedy, there's nothing to be angry. So that is freedom, actually. No greed, no anger. Full attention. That's why. No delusion. No absent-mindedness. We must be diligent today. To wait until tomorrow is too late. Oh, this reminds me of a line. My mind is terrible. So many things in my mind. To wait until tomorrow is too late. There's a line in a song somewhere. It's now or never, that song. Who sang that? I don't remember. I think it's part of... Oh, I see, yes. So, we must be diligent now. To wait until tomorrow, it's too late. So, it's now or never. Death comes unexpectedly. We don't know when we'll die. But we just believe that we'll live for a long time. Oh, I'm quite healthy. And I'm going to live for at least 20, 30, 40 years. I even hope to live for 50 years. 50 more years. I want to work until the last day, the last moment. So anyway, no matter when it happens, it can come unexpectedly. Most people died unexpectedly, but some people know that they are going to die. Because they've been sick for a long time, they know that they are going to die. And actually, those people are very fortunate. Those who know that they are going to die, many months or maybe years in advance, they are very fortunate. Some people told me that I want to die instantly so that I don't have to suffer. But I noticed that those people who know that they are dying slowly and slowly, in the beginning they are very sad, they are very depressed. But especially if they are meditators, they come out of depression very quickly and they meditate, they make use of each moment, each day, very well. The moment they wake up, they feel so happy. I'm still alive. And they make use of their time very well. Whenever they meet somebody, they relate to that person with real care, real love, real compassion. Because they know that only for a few days, maybe for a few months, we'll be together. Then I'll be gone. I won't see them anymore. So why think about things that frustrate us, rather think about the nice things that we can do for each other, the nice things that we have done for each other, and to treat with kindness, with respect, with honesty, with openness, being very real. This is something I'm trying to do also. Well, I don't know how you feel, but a long time, for many, many years in my life, I felt like I was not real. I was just acting a role very well. So well that everybody believed that. But you know that as long as you go on acting, pretending, you feel not real. And you don't feel satisfied with your life. So, I want to be real. I really want to find out what I want to do, how I feel, who I am, where I'm going. So, that comes unexpectedly. How can we bargain with it? No bargaining. The sage calls a person who knows how to dwell in mindfulness. So how to dwell in mindfulness? Night and day. So night and day means always. Night and day, one, this is in quotation, one who knows the better way to live alone. I repeat the sentence again. The sage calls a person, the sage means a wise person, like a Buddha or an Arhant, anybody who is wise. The sage calls a person who knows how to dwell in mindfulness, night and day, one who knows the better way to live alone. So if we live, if we dwell in mindfulness, night and day, so that means, you know, dwell in mindfulness. Live in mindfulness. Mindfulness becomes our home. One who knows the better way to live alone. So the better way shows that there's another way, but not the better way. There are many other ways to live alone. You just go into the forest, build a small cabin, and live there alone with nobody around. But it's not that's not the better way to live alone. Although that might be useful for some people for a certain amount of time, but you cannot do that all your life. You have to be related with others. Even monks have to be related with other monks, teachers, villagers, supporters. So what does this mean? One who knows the better way to live alone. Most people feel lonely, but they don't live alone. They are just feeling very lonely, but they are not living alone. You can live alone and not feel lonely. That's what the meditators learn to do. And that's a very useful thing to learn to do. Live alone and not feel lonely. That's what we do. We live in a forest in a small place, mostly alone, but never felt lonely. Even now here I live in my room most of the time. Very rarely I come out of my room. I live alone, but I don't feel lonely. I feel connected, I feel related. So how do you do that? That's what we learn to do. A meditator learns to do that. So very beautiful, you see, very deep, very profound. That means when you are not thinking too much about the past, when you're not thinking too much about the future, when you are not feeling greedy or angry, when your mind is quiet and mindful, that means a better way to live alone. There might be a lot of people around. So in the retreat, we'll be together, sitting together. I'll be sitting with you too. But each of us alone. Because we are meditating. We are very mindful. We are not reacting. So you don't react with greed, anger, pride, envy, jealousy. Then you are alone. And the moment you react, you are not alone anymore. When you are greedy, you are not alone anymore. When you are angry, you are not alone anymore. So, when you are mindful and not greedy, not thinking too much about the past or the future, but sometimes you think about the past, sometimes you think about the future, if it is useful, that's okay. Then you are psychologically independent. And this word is very important, psychologically independent. I'm dependent on you in many ways, but psychologically, I'm not dependent on you. I don't expect you to come and make me happy. I'm happy, just the way I am. But I expect you to help me when I need something, when I want to go somewhere. I expect that. I'm dependent on you for those things. So you give me all those help, I appreciate them very much, but I'm not dependent on you psychologically. Psychologically, I'm independent. And that means to be alone. When you're dependent on another person, even though that person is not near you, you are not alone. So when you meditate and develop these qualities, you become alone, but you are not lonely. Try to understand the difference. There's a big difference. So Buddha encouraged monks to go and live in seclusion. But he did not encourage monks to be totally alienated. I saw that big word in the newspaper 2 weeks ago, alienated. Very sad. That's not the kind of thing Buddha encouraged. So you meditate and make your mind very calm and peaceful. No greed, no anger, no pride, envy, jealousy. That is alone. But you are related to people. You go to the village every day to get your food. And people come to you and do things for you and ask for advice. You give them advice. But you're not dependent. So you are alone. As long as you are independent, you are alone. So to be alone is very good, but to be lonely is not good. And a few more things. This is two lines from a verse that I read a long, long time ago, but it's a very long verse, 3 pages long, I think. I can remember only 2 lines, the first 2 lines. That's a very beautiful 2 lines. And I'm living those 2 verses, those 2 lines. So this is what I do. I live poems. And my life become a poem. And those 2 verses, 2 lines are, the great way is not difficult for those who have no preferences. And I'm trying to live that. The great way is not difficult for those who have no preferences. So, preferences are not that bad. Needs are very bad, actually. We say, I need this, I need that. Or I want this, I want that. Want is not that very bad. Need is even too bad. Because when we say, I need, and that means I cannot live without it. So in most cases, we don't need much. What we really need is so little that it's funny to talk about it. We don't even want to talk about it. We don't need much. Just a small amount of rice, some green vegetables, a little bit of beans is enough. Just fill your stomach. Your stomach is quite happy. Only your tongue is not happy. But your stomach is quite happy with it. What we need is so little. And for clothing, you see, I wear the same clothes. If I need to wash, I wash once in the morning and dry it in the evening, iron it, dry, and then wear it again. Every day wearing the same clothes. No need to change. Just wash it and wear it again and again. No problem. My body is quite heavy. Maybe my eyes. Sometimes pretty unhappy about it. Only my eyes. But my body, as long as it feels warm, it's perfectly okay. Only my eyes causing so much dukkha. So now I'm becoming a little bit wiser. I don't listen to my eyes and to my tongues. But I listen to them when I walk. So that I don't fall into the pit. So, when you say, I need, look very deeply and ask yourself, do I really need that? Can't I let go of it? Sure, you're really sure that you really need it? If you ask that question, maybe 99 out of 100, your answer will be no, I don't need it. I want it. So be very honest about it. I want it. That's very honest. And even better if you say, I prefer it. By saying, I prefer it, it means that it's not such demanding. You can change your preference. Well, it's okay, I can let it go. I prefer this, but If I can, I cannot get that, I'll be quite satisfied with what I get. And even then, you see, if you have no preference at all, you are so peaceful and free. So why making yourself so unhappy, so unfree? You are letting this happen. So when we go to the retreat and meditate, you may not get so many things that you are used to getting. Eating, drinks, many other things too, you may not get. So prepare your mind. I practice these two lines. The great way is not difficult for those who have no preferences. You will not die in the retreat. Buddha said, even if you die, keep working. Work hard. Even if your body is reduced to skin and bones, work hard. But I'm only afraid that you'll put on weight for not having enough exercise. So don't worry about that. You'll have enough to eat. Fill your stomach. Don't listen to your tongue. Just listen to your stomach. You'll be quite happy no matter what you put in, as long as it's healthy, fresh, vegetarian meal. Quite happy. Well, these are a few things just to make your mind in the right frame. It's very important. Framing your mind is very important. Creating the mood, very important. If you're in the right mood, in the right frame of mind, things are very easy. And also, in the retreat, during the retreat, we may not talk to each other unnecessarily. When it's really necessary, we will talk. You can talk with me. And if you want to ask a question, you can ask me questions. If you do not want to ask questions verbally, you can ask questions on a piece of paper. Write it on a piece of paper and keep near my seat. I'll read it and answer the question. You don't need to put your name there if you don't want to. If you get the answer, that's enough. And if you need to talk with me personally, you'll get a chance to talk about that too. Every day, depending on the condition, depending on the situation, I'll make time. And right now, I don't know where the place would be. It's good to do that in the meditation hall, the place where we are going to meditate, because according to the plan, we have 1.5 hours to walk in the morning, 1.5 hours to walk in the evening too. That's long walking. In between also 1 hour walking, 1 hour sitting. So when somebody goes for a walk, if you have a question, I think it's suitable, we can do the question and answer in that time also. Otherwise, if it's not suitable, we'll make another time just for question and answers. And you will not be talking to each other. So I think now it's good for you to get to know each other. If you don't know anybody's name, and I want to have your names also, so that I know who you are. Because I know all your faces. I've seen you many, many times, so I know all your faces. But some of you, I don't remember the names. So each of you now here, feel that you are friends. Feel that we are brothers and sisters. And this feeling is also very important, you know. Just practicing mindfulness vipassana practice alone is not enough. Please understand it, it's not enough. So we need to practice more than that. Practice loving kindness, metta meditation. And with that also comes compassion also. So the two are so close. And also we reflect on the qualities of the Buddha, which makes the mind so calm and peaceful and pure also. When we think of somebody pure, our mind, our heart tends to become like that. We can let go of more and more. When you think of the Buddha, his freedom, his purity, his wisdom, his compassion, instantly you want to become like that. So just wanting to become like him makes you let go of other things that are hindering you. So again, along the way, in the process, we will practice that too. For only a few moments, a few minutes, So when we practice metta meditation, it's not just words. We think of each other, each person, and direct, radiate our kindness. Any kind of kind thought, we radiate each on each other, so that we feel very friendly and secure and relaxed. So get to know each other. I think most of you know each other already. So we are already friends, or you may even feel like we are brothers and sisters. We are a family. This feeling also makes you feel very secure and relaxed. Very important. So one meditation helps another meditation. Mindfulness helps you become more mindful, more peaceful, more sensitive. It helps you to become more loving, more kind, more considerate. So we need to be very considerate. So many people living together in the same place for so long, for 9 days. So it's not really, if you have not prepared properly your mind, it can cause a lot of friction, a lot of frustrations. Even two people living in the same place, you have to be so patient, considerate, so forgiving, so understanding. Small things may happen every now and then and irritates you. And you keep thinking, oh, that person, I wish that person hadn't come to the retreat. He said he's going to come and sit and meditate. Look, he's moving every minute. So many thoughts will happen in your mind. And if somebody eats, I know a lot of people told me directly, they eat together and they come and tell me, that person is so greedy, you know. He took so much of the nice things. All the dessert, he ate the whole plate. Things like that happen, you know. It's quite human to happen. So many things will happen, even closing the door, banging the door. Sometimes people forget, even I forget. Sometimes I just bang the door, boom, such loud noise. And I felt very ashamed, oh, so unmindful. Although nobody was around, actually. So it's very important to feel that we are helping each other, we are supporting each other. So every moment, every day, a few moments in our sitting, we radiate our kindness, loving thoughts, understanding, forgiving, making feel each other very safe and secure, so that you don't feel judged. If you do something wrong, you know that nobody will be upset about it. We know, sometimes we forget. So get to know each other now, feel that we are part of a big family. So this is metta. Metta doesn't mean just thinking, may all beings be happy, and oh, that person, accepting him. So in Burma, they have a verse for that. I forgot the whole verse. They say, Jabo chintan ji gamapa. Jabo bad breath, chin mosquito. Means body lice. Kiga means a crow. Accepting all those creatures, may all other beings be happy. Very funny, but it so happens. So I hope that you have understood the basic instructions about meditation, and you still have a chance to answer, to ask questions now. If you still have doubts about the basic meditation technique or method or instruction, you still have a chance to answer, to ask a question. So if you have any question, please ask now. Anything about the retreat? Yes, please. Yes, we have time for interview. Very short. You can ask a question, or you can express your experience and get some very clear when other people can hear. So I understand that very well. So I'm plan for that. You may ask a question privately. So I'm willing to help you in any way I can. So this preparation is just to make you the most of your 9 days in the retreat. Because such precious 9 days, each day is so precious. And this is not something we do all the time. This is something very special, actually. Very rare.
So I want you to make the most of it, to really enjoy it, to really feel that, oh, it was so worthwhile. And you remember it. Later you remember it, oh, I'm so happy that I did that. It's so rare to get a chance to feel that. As a memory later and feel happy about it, yes. And it will help you to keep on with people. And you will really learn to meditate. You will make some deep insight, experience some deep insight. So that will help you for the rest of your life. And I think even for next life. Because every deep insight has tremendous power. It can affect you many lives. If you understood even this is just pure physical phenomenon, not a being, not a thing. This is just pure mental phenomenon, not a being, not a thing. That just that understanding very clearly, deeply, can affect you for many lifetimes. Anytime you hear Dhamma, you know instantly, yes, this is right. So tremendous power, it has tremendous power. Wisdom has very, very strong power. So wisdom, mindfulness, clarity is something we don't do, most of us don't do all the time. So we have lived many, many lifetimes before, but I don't know exactly, but just to make a learned guess, we can tell that we have not meditated much, even in our past times. Maybe we have done a lot of merit, giving things, supporting other people, helping other people, keeping the precepts and all those good things. We might have done that, quite probable. But very rarely we really meditate. Very rarely, even when we meditate, we really penetrate and see the way things are. So if you really think about it, what you are going to do is something you have never done before, maybe. And even in the future, I would like to do that, longer retreat, 15 days, 20 days, if we can plan for it. I'm really happy to help you. Just when I come back. So when possible, we will do it, but we cannot really be sure that we will be able to do it. But if we really put our mind, if we really put our heart in doing it, it will help. The conditions mean external and internal. Yes, yes. Yes, the same experience, you make more progress and experience something you have not experienced before. So when you think of condition, think of both, internal and external. Both conditions. Yes, please. People take a lot of pride in their seat. And in most cases, the seat shows who they are. So, to give you an example, I'll tell you that some people told me, in some offices, if you go into the office room, just the size of the office tells you who this person is. And if you see a pot plant in the room, and the rarity and the expensiveness of the pot plant tells you who this person is. The boss. And if there are more pot plants, then it's a bigger boss. Not enough room any left. Just the whole room filled with pot plants. So that means that we take so much pride in what we wear, in the seat we use to sit or to sleep. And we discriminate each other by using different seats. So you shouldn't sit in that chair, that's for somebody special. So when we take 8 precepts, we make ourselves deliberately humble. We don't show off with our clothes or with our seat. So no high luxuriousness. It affects our mind, actually. And 8 precepts also, I'm glad that you mentioned that so that I get a chance to do that. 8 precepts is not to deprive you of your necessity. It helps you to meditate, to make yourself, your life more simple. And if you are not used to keeping 8 precepts, you may think that, oh, it's so hard. But if you are willing, even though if you are not used to it, if you are willing, you will find that after the second day, it's okay. only the first day you feel like you're missing something. Yes, the meal. You can drink a lot of juice, and if you are used to doing that, then you don't even need, feel the need to drink anymore. Just water is enough. But it's okay, you can drink juice. Have a big meal for your breakfast and another big meal for lunch. So, after that in the evening, drink juice. And drinking juice is good for meditation also. Liquid food doesn't make you feel very heavy and tired. It gives you a lot of energy, feels very light. So, to make your life simple, to save time also, it's very important. Think about it, how much time we spend to eat. When I eat, it takes about 15 minutes. I give myself 20 minutes, but in 15 minutes, I finish eating my meal. When I think about how much time people spend for cooking, I thought, why so much time just to cook? Just boil, put a little bit of salt and oil and eat it. Just spend 10 minutes to cook and 10 minutes to eat. So it's okay to eat so that you have enough energy to keep yourself healthy. But don't spend too much time, do too much thinking about food. I did that also when I was young. Whenever we meet each other, we would talk about this and that, and I don't know how the conversation slips into food. Again and again about food that we ate this morning. And after a while we notice them, hey, look, whenever we meet, we talk about something else and we end up talking about food. So it's a big part of our life. We need to eat. Our body needs to eat. So we are not depriving ourselves or destroying or ruining our health by not eating. We are eating enough. And there are a few things here also. Valuable things also. Don't bring anything valuable. It just worries too much. If there are any more questions, please ask more questions now. Actually, dairy product is considered a kind of food. Only fruit juice is actually allowed. Vegetable juice. Fruit juice. Pardon? Plain tea, I think, is okay. Yes, black tea is okay because honey is allowed, cane sugar juice is allowed, coconut water is allowed. Very nutritious. And orange juice, even banana juice. Actually, banana juice is very wholesome food, actually. It has got a lot of protein, carbohydrate, vitamin D, and a lot of minerals. You can live on banana for many, many days without becoming unhealthy. Yes? Who's going to ask first? Two together. Okay, you ask now. We can get the question. Yes. So that's the main point, is to make your life very simple. That's the main point. You don't spend time to cook. So from my point of view, even drinking soy milk is okay. You don't cook, you just pour some milk and drink it. But for dairy product milk, you need to cook. Anyway, the main purpose is to make your life very simple, just to let go of something, to let go of your craving for food. And you know anything about the King Melinda? Yes, you know that. Yeah. Sometimes he had 8 precepts. He was the one who asked so many questions to Mahindra, Melinda, Venerable Melinda. Really nothing more. Venerable Nagasena, I mean, said thank you. So the king's name was Melinda, or Minanda. In Pali I called Melinda. And he asked a lot of questions to the Venerable Nagasena. Yes. And this king, you know how careful and how wise he was? Before he asked the Venerable Nagasena the question, he kept 80 steps or about for a week. He lives in a very simple room, not in the big decorated palace room, in a very simple room, and he wears very simple clothes, and he covers his hair with something like this, very simple, just to cover it, not to make it beautiful. And kept 80 steps, meditated for a while, and then he asked a question. You know, when you prepare yourself like that, your mood, your perspective changes. You don't feel like you are a king anymore. You feel like you are a person who wants to know the truth. And you prepare your body and mind for that. So these things are very important. Take notice. If he felt that I'm a king, then from that feeling, if you ask questions, you ask stupid questions. So he deliberately distanced himself from being a king. Without giving up power, but he distanced himself. He stopped attending the court. And he just meditated for about a week. He kept eight pieces and then asked a question. Then he has a very important question to ask. Very meaningful question to ask. So these are the things I think we should remember and learn and do it the same. Very important. If I don't meditate, it will be very difficult for me to talk about meditation. And if you don't meditate, it will be very difficult for you to ask about meditation. If you are doing it with all these preparations, then you know what needs to be asked. And if you have to say something, if I have to say something, then I'll know what to say. Yes, now your question. If you can stay with your breath alone, stay with that as long as possible. And when some other sensations in your body becomes very strong and attracts your attention, so naturally your mind will go there again and again. And in that case, pay attention to that sensation for quite a long time. Stay with it for a long time, as long as you can stay. It doesn't matter with what sensation you stay with. The only thing that really matters is to stay with it for a long time and see the nature of it. See that it's just a natural phenomenon. It has no shape, no name, and it doesn't belong to anybody. Not thinking. Not to get distracted. Yes, that's right. You've got the idea very clear now. Yes, it might disappear. Sometimes it might not disappear. Most of the time, it disappears. When it disappears, then that's the breathing. Sometimes even breathing disappears. Only very clear, peaceful state of mind is there. Then you pay attention to that. Nothing's there anymore. No bodily sensation, no breath even. Although you are still breathing, but it becomes so subtle that it cannot come into your awareness anymore. And also because you are paying more attention to your mental state, the more you pay attention to your mental state, the more you get absorbed into the mental state, and your mind stays in your mind. So your body disappears from your focus. Disappears from your focus, so you are not aware of it anymore. You don't see anything in the body. You can only feel the mind. It's very clear, very calm. Sometimes a ripple, something like a ripple comes. You can see that, feel that it goes away. Stay with that. But it happens only in the later stages. This is. With that sensation, stay with it as long as you can. Stay with it. Not being necessary, actually. If you can stay with that sensation, stay with it. Because this is just another sensation. Breath is also one sensation. But we choose breath because it is always with us. other sensations, they are there sometimes, they are not there sometimes. When thoughts come, pay attention to the thought. But if you can pay attention to the sensation completely, that is good enough. Whether you pay attention to your breathing, which is also a sensation. When you breathe in and out, it's a sensation you're paying attention to. It's not the in and out direction. It has no shape. You are not thinking about the breath. You are paying attention to the sensation happening while this process of breathing is going on. Breathing in, you feel some sensation. Breathing out, you feel something. The sensation. So even when you are breathing in and out, you are paying attention to the sensation. So this is one of the sensations. Because it is so natural and it happens all the time, we take it as our focal point. But when another sensation happens in the body, we pay attention to that. And if you can stay with that sensation as long as it lasts, keep doing that. We don't say that this is better than that. Because only in summertime meditation, you have to stick to one object. With Vipassana meditation, you can switch from one object to another as long as you don't think about it. As long as you don't think about anything else. You can pay attention to any sensation and stay with it as long as possible. And when it disappears, come back to your focal point. And sometimes it doesn't disappear. Like say, for example, pain. It becomes more and more painful and more and more painful. After a while you think that, I can't bear this anymore. It is too painful and it's making my mind agitated now. Sometimes people even tremble because of the pain. They endure it. After a while they think, I can't take it anymore. So you become, some people shake with pain. Some people sweat with pain. Some people are very brave. And then at last, if you think that this is the limit, it's not really useful anymore, change your posture slowly, mindfully, very, very slowly. As you move even a centimeter, you can feel the sensation differently. It's getting better. So you can change the position slowly. Feel it changing, disappearing. And then you find another position which you feel comfortable. And you can see also your mind become more relaxed. Because when you are feeling pain, naturally your mind becomes very tense. Now your mind becomes also very relaxed. And then back to breathing. It's quite natural. The process, the whole process is quite natural. Right? Just see the thinking. Sometimes thinking about food, sometimes thinking about home, sometimes thinking about work, sometimes thinking about friends. You just notice that thinking and another. That's the sensation. Later in your meditation, you can just stick with the thought, but that happens later. For a beginner, if the person stays with the thought, it just goes on and on and on with no ending. But after you've developed some samadhi, if you look at a thought, you can see very clearly each word going in your mind. It's like talking inside. You can even hear it. One word after another. And if you become really exact on the point, it disappears. Stops. No thought anymore. And when there's no thought anymore, if you can, you can see the mind with no thought. For example, it's like you're watching a television, and then the program ends, or you switch to another channel where there's no program. When there's no program, what is there? No picture, yes, but something is there. It's a blank and bright screen. The mind becomes like that. Blank, but bright. Bright means you're aware. The awareness is there. The mind is alert, but very quiet. No thought, no picture, no sound, no words. Very quiet, very clear. You can feel that and stay with that. This is the clear state of mind. That becomes the object of meditation again. And if you can stay with that longer and longer, it helps you very, very much. The longer you can maintain that clear, quiet state of mind, when something else happens, it becomes more clear. So after a while, you just wash your mind, and you begin with breathing for a few minutes, and then you pay attention to your body also. After a while, when you develop some mindfulness, some samadhi, your mind becomes very calm and peaceful. When you wash your mind, one thought comes, slowly goes away. Another thought comes, slowly goes away. You wash it and wash it and wash it. And as you can wash it really directly, right on the present moment, it stops and the mind becomes suddenly clear. No thought anymore. You can see that mind, no thought. Very clear state of mind. And if you can touch with your mindfulness, awareness, that state of mind, it stays. Which means no thought coming anymore. So you can stay with that thought, and after a while you can maintain that. You can tune and adjust your mind and maintain that clear state of mind for a long time and stay. It becomes, your mindfulness becomes stronger and stronger. And from that space, you can experience anything else happen without this space disappearing. When a sound comes, you can, without losing this clear state of mind, you can experience that and it disappears immediately. Even without losing this clarity of mind, if any sensation happens in your body, you can still experience that. From that clear state of mind, you experience that sensation and disappears. But that also happens in the later stages, not in the beginning. So it's very natural. You stay with what happens. Even when unpleasant sensations or some kind of disturbing question also comes. A question coming in, what is this? What is this? What is that? What should I do now? And if you pay attention to the question, after all it disappears and you steal that. You ask any question. Whatever comes next, just pay attention. It disappears and another thing comes, pay attention. So if you are willing to do that, then just go on doing that. You don't need to do anything else. Just pay attention to whatever comes. Whatever happens in your body or in your mind happens to be observed. So everything happens to be observed. And all you need to do is to observe it, to look at it, to pay attention, to see what it is. Don't need to change it. Don't need to push it away. Don't need to create anything. Very, very simple. If you can do that, your mind becomes very calm, very still. You're not doing anything at all. That's the kind of samadhi. Very calm. And sometimes nothing is happening. The mind is very calm and clear. You can see that mind more and more clearly, more and more clearly. You can see that it's very calm. You experience calmness. You experience samadhi again. This is samadhi. The mind is bright. It's like a flame. It's like a candle in a cave. Very deep cave with no wind, no air. No wind. So stay still, light a candle. It's burning bright, but the flame is so still that it's like pink. You can sometimes feel your mind like that, very calm. Not to move at all. And sometimes you feel your mind very tranquil. That means cool, very cool. You can see that sometimes you can feel that it's so balanced that you don't have to do anything at all. Just balance. So much equanimity. Sometimes you feel a lot of motivation, sadhya. You keep meditating. You don't want to get up, you don't want to go out and do anything else. You just want to go out and meditate. Sometimes you even tell yourself, I can sit like this forever now. If the mind stays like that, you really can stay, sit forever. Only sometimes it becomes weaker and naturally things change always. Yes, before you become sleepy, pay attention to what happens to your mental state. Because this is also one object of meditation. In Pali, Sankhya. Sankhya means the mind going away, not going out, it's going in. Not samadhi, but it's becoming more and more sleepy, more and more sleepy. Maybe sometimes it feels like being sleepy and lazy. When you are sleepy, you are lazy actually, because there's no energy, no motivation. So first, when it's happening, see that mental state also. To see whatever is happening now is very, very important, rather than to overcome it. So when it happens, pay more attention. And sometimes, just by paying attention, making yourself alert, I'll pay more attention now. That makes you wake up again. And sometimes, as you pay more and more attention, for a brief few seconds, you fall asleep. There's nothing, you're not aware of anything at all. And then you wake up again and notice that, for a brief moment, maybe 1 second, maybe 2 seconds, fall asleep. And when something happens and you notice that, you wake up again. So try first to do that. Because sitting meditation is only for 1 hour. If you try, you can sit for 1 hour. Try to stay with it, sitting. After that, you walk for 1 hour. But you'll find that after a few days, you can sit longer and longer. That's why, although it's not included in the program, later along the retreat, after maybe 5 or 6 or 7 days, if you want to, and if you can, you may sit without going for a walk. Because we have many time for walking, 4 or 5 times to walk. And if you want to skip, you can just go on sitting. But be very careful. Don't do that just to prove it. Do it if it is really useful for you to do. You are not proving anything to yourself or even to others. You are not proving that I can sit for 2 hours. You don't need to prove that. Whether you are sitting or walking, the most important thing is to be really mindful, to pay real attention to what is happening in the body and mind now. So that means that I don't mean to say that sitting is better than walking. Not necessarily. Sometimes during the walking meditation session, you are more mindful. Sometimes during the sitting meditation session, you are more mindful. So to be more mindful is more important than just to be sitting a long time or just to be walking a long time. So time doesn't matter actually. If you can stay, and if you're willing to stay, stay a few more minutes, and then later, when you're ready to get up and walk. So this sitting and walking, alternating, is a very good schedule. It's good for your health too. If you just sit for too long, sometimes your body and also your mind becomes very dull. But as I said, after a few days, if you like to sit longer, sit longer. It's all right. Walking 1.5 hours in the morning, that's a long walk. You can go out and walk. And in the evening also, another 1.5 hours, it's a long walk. But in between, there are many walking sessions too. 7 to 8:30 is one long walking. And 10 to 11, 1 hour walking, 1 to 2, 1 hour walking, and 3 to 4, 1 hour walking, and that's tea and walking together, 1.5 hours. So you just drink a cup of tea, it takes for 5 minutes, and then go for 1 hour and 25 minutes walking. After a while, you know, naturally, which is naturally, happens, you tend to sit more and more. You get very calm and peaceful. You just sit for more, 1 hour, 1.5 hour. And sometimes, some people, later in the retreat, especially when they are doing long retreats, sit for three sessions together, because 1 hour sitting, 1 hour walking, another hour sitting. So if they don't get up for the 1 hour walking in between, they can go on sitting for 3 hours. Some people do that. You are not required to do that, but some people like to do that and they do that. And 7:30 onwards, sitting or standing. The standing meditation is also good, necessary. And in some cases, here also 9 to 10 a.m., sitting or standing. You may stand also. It's okay, no problem. It's equally good if you can do that. Just stand somewhere with the whole body as relaxed as possible, your arms very relaxed, just there. And maintain the posture, standing, and just meditate just like sitting. But in the beginning, you may find it hard to stand for half an hour. So just stand for 15 minutes and then when you feel ready, sit down slowly, quietly. Try that. Mm-hmm. Well, don't expect anything. Yes. Walking. Especially, actually, you know, after walking for about an hour and you go and sit, if you do walking meditation really mindfully, and after walking, if you go and sit, that sitting is very good. Because the samadhi, the mindfulness that you have developed during walking, helps you even more while you sit. So, no matter what happens, try to do both regularly. Without preferring one or another. See what happens. And if something becomes especially important, then we will discuss about that later. But first try to sit and walk regularly. So try to be in the schedule. If it's really useful to do one thing more than another, then we can discuss about it. Anything more you want to say? Anything more? Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes, this is also very important. I even thought of talking about that on the last day. But it's okay, you can talk about now. Because you see, it's very good that you ask this question now. Because if you don't ask this question now, you know what will happen? You'll be thinking about it going in the retreat. That's not a good thing to do. That's why I want to be here now. Talk about it. So, naturally, if you really pay more and more attention, after the first day you become more calm and peaceful. Maybe you think about this and that for a while. And then, after a few days, 3-4 days, your mind becomes settled and settled and settled. Become very quiet and peaceful. After 8 or 9 days, you will think, oh, it'd be wonderful if I don't have to leave. That I don't have to go back to that busy life. Naturally it happens. And your body and mind also become very sensitive. So when you go out suddenly, it's very painful. Rushing, driving, seeing this, hearing that, it's very painful. So expect that. So during the retreat, after the retreat is over, stay there for a while and talk about something so that you get used to talking and adjust yourself back to normal. And on Monday also, the strength of the meditation, I don't know how to say another word, the momentum, it will still go on for a few more days. So even on Monday, if you have to go to work, you feel like you don't want to talk much. Even the way you do things become slow. This is quite natural. And so if you can, tell your friends about this, that this is something that happens naturally. So when you come back for work, your friends know that this today or a few more days, you'll be a little bit quiet and slow, not so talkative. And sometimes you might not want to pay attention to what others are talking about, because to pay attention to too many people talking about so many different things is so tiring. makes you tired, you feel like, oh, it's so tired. So tell them that if I don't pay so much attention, please understand me and forgive me, it will be okay a few days later. And talk about this also with your family members. Tell them that I'm going for a retreat and will come back, and this is something that happens naturally. So don't think that I've become... what have you become? Zombie, like a zombie, yes. Don't think that, something has happened. It's just normal. Like you see, when you hypnotize a person, and when the person is under hypnotism, and when you bring that person out again, that person becomes very disoriented for a few minutes. So meditation is very similar to being in a kind of hypnotic trance. Very, very similar. So after a few days, you can get used to living on the way you lived before, and maybe little bit more detached. Sometimes this detachment goes on for many, many days and then months. If you keep on meditating, it can go on. But you can still do your work even better. And your relationships also will get even better because you don't react so much anymore. If you can maintain your awareness, when somebody talks, you can pay full attention and understand it very well, and then respond appropriately, not automatically. So there's one thing that a lot of people complain about, and this is also something important to discuss. People say that when you become very mindful, you lose your spontaneity. I don't know exactly the pronunciation. Spontaneity. Yes? You are not spontaneous anymore. You are more deliberate. Before you say something, you think for a few more seconds. Before you just stop flip, without thinking about it, you don't even know what you are talking about. But after that, as you become more and more mindful, before you say something, you think about it, sometimes you just don't say anything anymore. It's not necessary. So people around you sometimes think that, looks like she's going to say something, but I don't know what happened. You know that what you are talking about, what you want to talk about, and you see this and you thought, not necessary. So these are a few things that we need to know. Maybe this becomes a kind of difficulty in your life. But as you go on with full confidence, keep on meditating, later it's not a problem anymore, and your life becomes even more meaningful, more structured, more disciplined. Less agitation, less waste of time, less waste of energy. And you don't get interested in too many things also. Even wearing too many things, going here and there too much, you lose interest. Because these things are not really necessary and not useful, actually. I don't know why people think they have to be doing something. They have to keep themselves busy all the time. This is becoming an addiction, a disease, actually. Why do you need to do so much? And many people these days, especially in the West, when you are not busy, they'll say something's wrong with you. They'll think, why? You are not doing anything? What do you do in your weekends? Oh, nothing. Just stay at home. Oh, you did nothing? Just sit at home. Something is wrong with you. Nothing's wrong. They are just crazy about rushing from here and there, and you are not. You are sane and they're crazy, and they think you're crazy. But be very patient and kind. Just understand them. So that's what I mean, you know, when you develop your mindfulness and concentration and deeper understanding, your world becomes different. You become different also. But because you are the one who is developing and growing, you need to be more patient and understanding and kind and forgiving. So understand other people and forgive them, even though they don't understand you. Many people told me that you try to understand us and we feel that you understand us. Don't you feel that you want us to understand you? I said, yes, if you understand me, I'll be so happy. But if you don't, well, I can understand that too. We want understanding from each other. Misunderstanding is also very painful. So since we are the one who are trying to meditate, developing mindfulness, kindness, and from that, deeper understanding, insight, we try to understand others
So with that understanding, your life will not be a problem actually. In the beginning, they may not know how to adjust to your change of behavior. So in some ways, you can help them. Anything more you want to discuss about this point? Yes, when it comes up during the last day, just before the meditation, you can talk about a few things just to conclude the session. That's why it is very important, you know, the last day after the last sitting meditation, actually it is for sitting, it will be a kind of discussion again, some kind of clearing the things to make it feel like this is the conclusion, the beginning and the conclusion. So this is another thing, when you do something, make it complete, like drawing a circle. Make it a complete circle. If you draw a circle and leave a small part disconnected, when you look at it, it doesn't look beautiful. When you complete it, you feel that completion. Very important to make it complete. And also, make a determination. And this determination is a very useful tool also. One of the 10 paramis is the parami of determination. Adhidhana parami. So adhidhana, what does that mean? The Pali language and Pali word is very interesting, very profound. Every word, when I look into the deeper meaning, it's very profound. You know the word tha means 10. Adhi means strong. That means to stand firm. So you are very strong, stand firm. This is what I'm going to do. You take a stand. And even in the Western world language, they use this idiom. You take a stand. You take a firm position. It's very important. So not to be wishy-washy. Not to be lukewarm. It's very important. So when you want to do something, first you learn about it very carefully. Yes, this is what I'm interested in doing. So when you learn enough, then you decide, I'm going to do this. And after you have decided to do it, don't change your mind anymore. Because if you change your mind again and again, it becomes a habit. Especially when it comes, when things become difficult, people tend to give up. Oh no, it's not working anymore, it's not useful anymore. Sometimes the mind becomes very tricky. Gives you very good excuses. More excuses, more excuses. Sometimes it will say, it will harm your health, take it easy. Or just stop for a while, you can do it later. Just take a break. The mind is so tricky. The mind means this defilement, this laziness. It's a kind of craving also. So, make a firm determination, I'm going to do this. And go for it. You will not die in 9 days. Nothing will happen. Actually, you feel even more healthy, fit, happy, peaceful. And only after a few days, only the first few days, because you are not used to sitting so much, you might feel some pain in your back or in your knee. Minor pain. I have a slip disc. I can still sit for hours. It's okay. Even with the slip disc, when I had that first happen, it was so painful. But even with that, I can meditate. And it went away slowly, but it took 3 months. But anyway, we can do more than we think we can. So now we will conclude our class here. So let's pay honor to the Buddha who is really worthy of honor. I honor the Buddha by the very practice which leads to liberation. I honor the Dharma by the very practice which leads to liberation. I honor the Sangha by the very practice which leads to liberation.